The screaming in the hall echoed and distorted as new voices joined in. Sometimes the subjects screamed so loudly and for so long that they ripped their vocal cords apart or would start spewing blood from torn capillaries in their throats. I smiled to myself. Personally, I had nothing against any of these men and women here, even though some of them were from Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, or Mexican drug cartels. We had murderers, torturers, rapists, and terrorists, and gang members galore to conduct our experiments on. But who was I to judge their actions? After all, I wasn't a much better person. I was just on a different side of it. I tortured people for the CIA and to protect the United States above all else. Jay, a chubby blonde secretary with a moon face, said from behind me. I turned to look at her. Cheryl, I said, nodding my head and smiling pleasantly. Cheryl was the ultimate in compartmentalization. At home, she was just a regular soccer mom with kids and PTA meetings. Here, though, she was an efficient bureaucrat for a secret black ops project that regularly tortured people, sometimes even to death. She kept each part of her life separate and never seemed bothered by switching from one to the other. Her help had likely prevented dozens of terrorist attacks and kidnappings across the globe. The screaming was almost deafening now, so I pulled her by her arm and we headed towards a nearby break room, where I poured myself a hot cup of coffee and lit a cigarette. "So, I have good news," she said cheerily, smiling a fake sweet smile at me. "Your new method of enhanced interrogation has a 95% success rate," she said. 95%, I exclaimed, elated. "That's higher than waterboarding or sensory deprivation or anything else. Actually, that's exponentially higher. I couldn't be more pleased. What great news," I said. "The new method of enhanced interrogation is a euphemism for torture, involved a drug called Salvia divinorum. We would extract the main psychoactive chemical from it, which was called salvinorin A, and run an IV drip into the subjects. Normally, Salvia divinorum was smoked and created intense dysphoric hallucinations that rapidly faded after a few minutes. But by running an IV drip of the drug, we could keep the subjects drugged in a nightmare horror state for days or even weeks. Their minds would start to snap after a week straight of the drug, however. At times, we would combine the effects of the drug with sensory deprivation or waterboarding on the most hardened subjects. And other times, we would simply play creepypastas narrated by Mr. Grinless in the background, and that would be more than enough to terrify the absolute shit out of them. Being a scientific man myself, I had tried a single IV syringe of Salvarin A so that I would know what the subjects were going through. Just that one dose was immensely horrible. I saw myself getting cut up into five pieces, the room falling apart, the fake plastic plants decorating my office started talking to me and mocking me with sarcastic movements. It was an incredibly uncomfortable and disorienting experience for the 3 or 4 minutes that it lasted, and I could see why even the most psychopathic killer would start to crack after days straight of living in that constantly nightmarish world. Cheryl held out a folder to me, a top-secret label and CIA insignia embedded into the front of it. I frowned and looked at it. "What's this?" I asked, opening it up. "You are being moved," she said, putting her hands up. "Look, I tried to argue against it, telling them your research here wasn't finished, but they insisted they have something far more important for you stateside. They want you to leave Guantanamo Bay within 15 minutes. They have a helicopter waiting for you outside already," she said. "This is ridiculous," I said, my heart rate rising in a warm flush, taking over my face. "I'm not even close to finishing my research here," I said. "I need at least another week, possibly a month, to finalize my results." She then shook her head at me. "Orders from the top brass. Sorry, Jay," she said, turning to leave. Fuming, I went into my office and packed up the most important files in a briefcase, and then walked out to the helipad. It was already running, blowing the salty Caribbean air around me in a deafening cacophony. The pilot took off as soon as I was in the helicopter. Looking to my left, I saw Cheryl. She smiled wanly at me, then looked down at her phone. I sat back in the seat, feeling the vibrations of the craft resonate through my body as we headed towards Florida. What could they have wanted me to see that was so important and needed me to immediately leave my current assignment? I wondered. I had seen some horrible things, men breaking their bones as they strained against the drowning horror of waterboarding, men tearing their own eyeballs out after they had lost their sanity, prisoners killing other prisoners by ripping their throats out with their teeth. I hoped that what they had waiting for me would not leave me with any deeper PTSD than I had already suffered. I already had enough nightmares to last me 1,000 years. I had woken up screaming for the past week straight, and at times I was afraid to fall asleep for what I would see in the dream world. Soon, I could see the white sand of the Florida beaches approaching. The Black Ops site was surrounded by 3 layers of razor wire topped electric fences. Guards and sniper towers formed an outer perimeter every few hundred feet. No one had ever escaped from the site, which we simply called the Lighthouse. Inside the razor wire stood a single behemoth of a building, pure white with no windows or insignia anywhere. It rose up and became narrower as it did so. Each floor formed in a perfect circle, and at the top lay a helipad where the pilot now aimed the chopper. It did resemble a lighthouse in some ways, hence the nickname. That wasn't the only reason why we called it that, though. This was also the main hub of psychic research for the entire Eastern Seaboard. The prisoners here were chosen for their supposed paranormal or mystical abilities to be studied at leisure by the scientists and agents of the CIA. As I got out of the chopper, an agent with black sunglasses and a black suit was waiting for me. "Dr. Salem," he asked me, shaking my hand. "You can just call me Jay," I said, smiling my fake smile. With a gentle guiding hand on my shoulder, he led me down to the top level. "We have been following your research with a Sovereign agent with Rapture," he said, a deadpan expression on his face. As we entered the staircase, the fluorescent lights began to flicker. We actually modified the agent somewhat, synthetically, strengthened it, and added some chemical functional groups that make it cross into the brain more effectively. We are about to test it on the first patient here, a shaman we kidnapped from the Amazon after witnessing his ability to levitate objects, to create light out of his hands in pure darkness, as well as other psychic phenomena, he said. I followed him down a sterile gray hall to a gray metal door labeled 1308. He opened it, and I followed him inside. A naked bronze-skinned man was strapped down to a metal gurney, an IV tube leading from his arm to a machine. From the top of the IV pole hung a solution labeled Salvernin, Ethoxy Alpha C. A doctor in a lab coat stood next to him, smiling as we walked in. The CIA agent nodded at him and he turned on the machine, letting the solution begin to drip down the clear plastic tubing and into the vein of the restrained man before me. His eyes widened in surprise as he lifted his head and looked straight at me. The fires of hell seemed to dance beyond his dilated pupils. His face transformed into a vicious snarl, his frown lines deepening to cracks as he regarded me with abject hatred. "You will see how damned you are," he said with a thick Spanish accent, never taking his gaze off of me. "And you will see hell unleashed before you. You are demons in human skin, but the real demons are here to reclaim their throne," he said. He smiled wickedly, the grin appearing to move unnaturally wide until it reached from ear to ear. "The slit wrists of the sky will open up and the horrors of hell will be with you," he said again. "Why is he still talking?" I asked the doctor. "Usually subjects become immediately incapacitated by the intensity and dysphoria of the experience. I've never seen one able to talk before even on Salvern A, and you claim this chemical is much stronger than that?" I said. The doctor shook his head. "This is not a normal subject, Dr. Salem," he said to me. "This man broke the necks of 2 soldiers as we brought him in, without even touching them. In terms of psychic powers, he is one of the strongest specimens we have ever seen. We have given him large doses of other drugs, such as LSD and barbiturates, and he seems to metabolize them much faster and remain mostly unaffected, even when he is injected with heavy doses, he said. I looked back at the shaman and immediately realized something was immensely wrong. Where there had been a white wall behind him, there now stood a fiery red hallway that seemed to extend for 1,000 feet. His gaze had left me and now stared into the back of the room. A massive metal door that looked hundreds of feet tall stood there. With a shriek of metal, it began to slide open, slowly. That door hasn't opened for 1,000 years, the shaman said, his voice rising with a mixture of euphoria and rage. But I have opened it now for you. Smoke and fire poured forward from the door as dozens of blackened, grasping hands pulled out, trying to push it forward faster. The mammoth weight of it held them in for a few seconds longer, but as more and more hands joined in, it started to fly open, then smashed into the wall with a deafening roar, like a gunshot going off. I turned to run to them, but found the door behind me locked. I ran to it, trying to open the knob or turn the deadbolt, but it felt like I was fighting against a solid metal wall. Looking back behind me, I saw the first of the beings had reached the end of the hellish gray entryway and reached the CIA agent and the doctor. The beings that ran into our room had blackened, sizzling skin, smoke still billowing behind them. They had no clothes, but only burnt flesh. Their eyes glowed red and their hair all gone from the constant fires they lived in, and they began to rip the CIA agent and the doctor apart with their bare hands. They tore off their skin, leaving blackened marks as they flayed them with sheer brute strength, licking the blood off their hands with sighs of pleasure. At that moment, the door to the room burst open and a team of CIA agents in SWAT gear entered, assault rifles raised. I let them all run past me and then tore off down the hall. Behind me, I heard screams that echoed after me, and I ran back to the helipad and told the pilot what had happened, and we quickly left that den of horror. I don't know the whole story of what happened back at the lighthouse, but I got out alive. The pilot and I were the only ones, as far as I know, who left that place alive. Hopefully the evil was contained within its walls, but if it gets out, it may lead to the end of our world. I saw the shaman's eyes light up, the fires of hell seeming to blaze and flicker behind his pupils. His grin stretched so wide that the skin of his cheeks began to split, sending rivulets of blood flowing down his face as if someone had cut him from ear to ear. And behind the skin, I saw countless blood-soaked teeth, rows behind rows of triangular, serrated teeth like those of a shark. He began to yell, gurgling the blood that filled his mouth. They're coming for you. You cannot hide from the eyes of hell, he shrieked at me, and I then woke up screaming. I was in the helicopter, flying away from the lighthouse where an experiment had gone terribly wrong and allowed creatures in from another dimension. Every time I closed my eyes, I could see their black smoking skin, their burning red eyes, and the way they ripped the bodies of my fellow agents apart in front of me and drank their blood like vampires. Looking out the window, I saw the pilot was aiming the chopper at the nearest Air Force base, only a 30-minute flight away, as he set down the chopper on a helipad surrounded by fighter jets and air traffic control towers. There was an emergency call that just came through on my phone then. The number was marked private, and I knew what that meant. It was a call from either the CIA or another related agency that didn't allow information to be transmitted about the caller. Hello, I said, and immediately a gruff voice began speaking. Where the hell are you? A man yelled. You weren't cleared to leave the site. I had to leave, I yelled back. I would have died otherwise. The man sighed loudly, clearly annoyed. You could have had him fly the chopper past the outer perimeter of the lighthouse and land it there. You certainly don't have the clearance to land at that Air Force base, and the air traffic controllers messaged me as soon as they saw the chopper on the horizon. Now get your ass back to the entrance of the lighthouse now, the agent on the line said. We have a strike force assembled, and we need someone with inside knowledge of what's going on inside that lighthouse to aid us. Unfortunately for all of us, you are the only one who can still make contact. All the other grunts and agents within the perimeter of the lighthouse have fallen completely out of contact. We expect you back here by 0830, he said. I checked my watch. It was already 7:45 a.m. I grunted in response and then turned to the pilot. They said they need us back there immediately, I told him, and he looked back at me in disbelief. Why do they need us to go back there? He asked me, his eyes wide and shocked. I'm just a pilot. I shrugged. They specifically requested you, which was a total lie, and I knew that when I said it. I just didn't want to go alone. He shook his head, starting up the chopper, and took off. We parked the helicopter onto a field a few hundred feet from the outer perimeter of the lighthouse. I jumped out, and the pilot grudgingly followed me. He had a pistol holstered around his waist, and he snapped in a few spare magazines into empty Velcro pockets built into his belt. I saw a team of agents and soldiers assembled on the front lawn of the lighthouse, looking up at the building with trepidation and fear. I walked towards the team, and a man came running out towards me. He had an expensive black suit on and a head full of pure white hair. He was white, but his eyes were so dark they had almost looked black. He stuck out his hand. Dr. Salem, he said to me, I spoke to you on the phone a few minutes ago. I'm Agent Rosgo. I shook his hand, his grip feeling like steel as he crushed my fingers and palms. I tried not to wince. I think you need to see this, he continued, letting go of my hand and turning around. The pilot and I then followed him. A team of agents stood around the back of a Humvee where radio equipment had been staged in the open trunk. A slender female sat there playing with the dials and then turned to Agent Rosgo. Okay, I got it, she said. He nodded and then turned to me. This has been broadcasting on repeat to the surrounding towns, Agent Rosgo said to me. I listened, and as I did, a sense of horror began to build within me. We have opened the gate, a hissing demonic voice said. The final battle has begun. We will be victorious. The forces of hell are unleashed. To those listening, all is not lost for you. You must prove yourself worthy. To do this, we require a sacrifice. You must choose a family member, whether a son or daughter, a mother or a father, a brother or a sister, a wife or a husband. It matters not to us. Drag the one you have chosen outside the front door of your house. Slit their throats. Dip your hand in their blood and leave a handprint on your front door, using their life's essence. If you do this, we will pass over you as the angels passed over the homes of those in ancient Egypt who marked their doors with blood. If you refuse, you will die horribly, burnt alive, choking, gasping, and tortured. Choose wisely. The end is near, and you will not receive another chance, the voice said. Then there was the hiss of static, a series of clicking noises, and the message started to repeat itself in the same exact voice. This is currently broadcasting to every AM and FM radio station in a 30-mile radius. We have tried signal jamming, but nothing stopped the message from being broadcast. So what do you make of this? Agent Rosgo asked me. Behind me, I heard the pilot shuffle nervously. Sir, the pilot said. Agent Rosgo turned his attention to the pilot angrily. And just who the hell are you? He asked. My name is Officer Booth, sir. Alistair Booth. I'm with the United States Air Force. My presence was requested. I quickly cut him off, not wanting them to know I had lied. For some reason that I felt only instinctually, I know I needed this man, this Alistair Booth, with me. I didn't know why yet, but something in the depths of my gut screamed at me to stay close to him. So I cut him off. Look, whatever was opened on the 13th floor of the lighthouse, it's not human, I said. I saw those things with my own eyes. They took down an entire armed team of CIA agents without even breaking a sweat. As for this message, maybe they are trying to brainwash people for some reason. Perhaps to use the local population as slaves or psychopaths. I don't know. I don't think anyone does. Not for sure, I said. Okay, but sir, Alistair pointed behind us to the front gate of the lighthouse. Something is breaking out. I see movement. We all then turned to look, and with a gasp of horror, I realized he was right. Many of the black demonic beings swarmed around the gates, flooding out of the lighthouse as clouds of black smoke followed behind them. But that wasn't all. From the top of the structure, I saw winged demons jumping off the helipad, flying straight at us. They looked like massive gargoyles with shining black skin and jaws that unhinged like those of a snake's. Within a few seconds, the first of the wave had reached the CIA agents in front, their horrendously widening jaws closing around the bodies of those in front, biting them in half at the waist and chest. The legs of the dying agents kicked and danced, the nerves randomly firing now that they were no longer connected to the brain. But within seconds, their mutilated bodies fell to the ground, and the shrieking of the gargoyles echoed all around us. And most of the agents in the front then began to raise their rifles to attack back. Gunshots echoed everywhere. The automatic gunfire sprayed across the gargoyles, blowing their reptilian faces into pieces. Black blood exploded out of the wounds, and hundreds of agents and soldiers that were assembled began to retreat in an orderly way, stepping back and spraying concentrated gunfire at those monstrosities nearest to our group. But looking behind them, I saw the black humanoid beings were quickly overwhelming the outer perimeter of the electric fence. Soldiers in the outer guard towers aimed rifles down at the burnt demons, and a few of the CIA agents even threw grenades at the demons. "Get down," they screamed, "and take cover." I ran behind a Humvee, putting my hands over my ears. A massive booming noise shook the earth as multiple grenades went off. I peered around the Humvee and saw that they had killed dozens of demons, their body parts strewn all over the grass. Here or there, a decapitated head of one of them still twitched, their fiery red eyes going out as if extinguished by water. But the grenades had also blown open holes in the outer perimeter of the fence, and the surviving hordes began to funnel through the new openings. I grabbed Agent Rosgo. "We need to get the shaman," I said. "He's on the 13th floor. Can you get us inside the building? Is there any other entrance like an underground tunnel?" I said. The pilot stood next to me, still in shock as guns roared all around us. The front wave of the demons hadn't reached the soldiers yet, but they were rapidly closing in. "Follow me," Agent Rosgo said, running over to a nearby Humvee. Alistair and I piled into the back seats and he took off, roaring down a dirt road that weaved around the circumference of the lighthouse. There is a secret access tunnel, usually used for maintenance at the other end of the perimeter. Very few people know about it, and the hatchway door is totally hidden. It requires a special security code to get in, but of course, I have that. I got all the necessary information once we saw what was happening on the security cameras inside the lighthouse, and before my team deployed to contain this issue, he said. "Okay, I have an idea," I said, "but it's going to be dangerous, and I don't even know if it'll work. I think the shaman is still getting the drugs fed into his system by intravenous drip, and he may be the one keeping the doorway open. If we can stop the drugs flowing into his system and take him out of there, we may be able to close the Hellmouth," I said. "Hellmouth, ha," Agent Rosgo said in response. "I like that. It really is an apt description," he said. "Do you think we need to kill the shaman?" Alistair asked. I turned to him, having almost forgotten he was there in my high adrenaline state and total focus on the mission. "I doubt it," I said, "but if we need to, then don't hesitate for a moment. It is better to kill one life to save the lives of countless others after all," I said. Alistair shook his head at this. "I don't believe in that. The ends justify the means crap," he said. "I'm not killing any innocent people. God would never forgive me. When I meet my creator, I want him to know that I never harmed an innocent person in my life," he said. "Okay, and how do you know the shaman is innocent?" Agent Rosgo asked him, looking in the rearview mirror. "You have seen the horrors he's unleashed, right?" "He's only unleashed those horrors after you guys kidnapped and tortured him, for no reason other than the fact that he has supernatural abilities," Alistair said. "That sounds like the definition of innocent bystander to me. Whatever unintended consequences arose from your experiment, that's on the CIA, not on the shaman they tortured out of scientific curiosity," Alistair said. Agent Rosgo then slammed on the brakes suddenly. pointing to a shrub immediately to the left of the car. The hidden hatchway door is beneath that withered-looking bush, Rosgo said. Let's go and do this. He jumped out of the driver's seat, first grabbing an M4 carbine from the passenger seat, then sprinted over to the shrub. After getting down on his knees, he began to feel around in the soft dirt. Aha, he exclaimed, pulling a handle up from the dirt. As he twisted the handle, a robotic voice began to speak from hidden speakers in the hatchway door. Please enter verification code, the voice said. 0910777, Agent Rosgo said flatly, and the door began to swing open, shrub and all. The shrub bush was apparently a fake plant attached to the metal interior as a marker. Dirt flew off of it, carried away by the tropical Florida breeze. I looked down and saw a ladder extending into total darkness. Red emergency lights strobed far beneath us at the bottom to the tunnel. Without hesitation, Agent Rosgo began to climb down. Then Alistair and I followed. The tunnel smelled of bleach and dust. It didn't appear to be often used. I saw a few spiderwebs in the top corners and the flashing red emergency lights illuminating the huge arachnids as they skittered across their webs, away from any new intruders into their silent den. We walked forward for what felt like forever, thousands of feet, perfectly straight tunnel disappearing into a point far in front of me. After about 20 minutes of walking, Agent Rosgo put his hand up, the universal military sign for stop. Up ahead, he whispered, is the entrance to the lighthouse. I looked and saw another ladder a couple hundred feet up. Then let's do this, I said. Agent Rosgo looked at me like I was crazy. Do you even have a gun, Jay? He asked. I shook my head. Sighing, he pulled out a pistol from his ankle holster. Luckily for you, I always carry two pistols and extra magazines to boot. Take this too. He gave me two extra preloaded magazines. If three magazines isn't enough to stop whatever is attacking us, then I don't think it's going to be stopped, he said. Why do you need two pistols and a full-auto M4 carbine? I said. He smiled slyly at this. Better safe than sorry, he said simply. Plus, the M4 carbine tends to waste bullets too fast when in full auto. You want to have multiple backups in a situation like this. He then looked at the ladder, a grimace crossing his face, and said, let's do this. Agent Rosgo went first, using the strap of the M4 carbine to suspend it around his neck while he climbed up rapidly. I went next, and Alistair followed closely behind us. We came to a basement room with boilers, circuit breakers, and other necessary equipment for the building's functioning. Nothing stirred down here. As we ascended the next flight of stairs to the ground level floor, I began to realize something was wrong. There was a humming in the air, as if countless high voltage power lines were directly overhead, but there was no sign of gargoyles or the demons. I saw only one elderly man, wearing a fishing cap and loose-fitting clothes, as he walked away from us across the lobby of the building. Sir, Agent Rosgo said, raising his M4 and pointing it at the man. As the elderly man turned, I gasped in horror. His eyes were pure black sockets, his nose eaten away as if by cancerous tumors. Blood and pus ran down his face from the hideous opening. His mouth had no teeth or tongue, but was simply a black void, and he screamed at us. His lips stretched open far wider than a human mouth should be able to, and as he shrieked, he sent waves of rushing air in our direction. The air smelled like rotting bodies, and I felt the sudden urge to vomit. Agent Rosgo began to fire, spraying countless bullets into the man's chest. He was pushed back slightly with the force of each bullet, but his skin rapidly grew back over each wound, and he began to approach us. Run, Agent Rosgo said. I'll distract him. You get to the 13th floor, both of you, he yelled. So we ran. As Alistair and I ascended the stairs in a panic, I heard hideous shrieks echoing from behind us, and then everything went deathly silent. We sprinted up all 13 floors, panting and heaving from exertion, but ran into no one else. As we slowly crept forwards towards the room where I knew the shaman was located, I began to be suspicious as the lack of creatures. Perhaps they had all already made it outside, or perhaps another wave was coming out and hadn't yet arrived. I peered around the doorway and saw the shaman, still on the gurney, naked, his eyes dilated and staring up at the ceiling. The IV drip continuously ran more of the drug into his veins. I saw the bag labeled Salvarine Ethoxy Alpha C was already half empty. I crept closer to the shaman, Alistair standing behind me, and began to undo the medical tape around the IV site before pulling the needle out. The shaman suddenly realized I was there, his hateful eyes turning to stare daggers at me. "You," he said. "Please, sir," I said, "we have to stop whatever's going on here. I am sorry for what they put you through, but I was just doing my job, and I have no ill will towards you," I said. He laughed maniacally at this. "No ill will? You people kidnapped me, tortured me, stripped me naked, pumped me full of drugs, and you say no ill will?" He snorted. "You are all the same. You will never learn until your world ends as a result of your stupidity and evil," he said. I looked beyond him to the huge metal door, still standing open 1,000 feet down the shimmering, illusory hallway that had been created by the powers of the shaman's mind. "How do we close the door?" Alistair asked bluntly. The shaman then laughed. "Only the blood of a righteous man can close the door," he said. "And I don't think we have any of those here. Do we, Dr. Salem?" He looked closer at me. "Your blood would be so impure and evil it would only force it open wider. The forces of hell are gathering and the next wave will soon break through. If you don't close the door now, you will never have another chance," he said. I looked at Alistair, wondering. "You said you'd never killed or harmed an innocent person," I said to him. He nodded. "You never took any bribes? Never broke any ethical codes at all?" I asked. "No, as I said, I don't want my creator to judge me," and I waved his words away. "You're the one who needs to go close that door," I said. I pulled a pocket knife from my pants, looked at the shaman, and said, "How does he do this?" "Just slice your arm and let the blood flow on the threshold of the doorway," the shaman said. "And you better hurry. I hear them drawing closer now." Alistair shook his head. "My wife and daughter live nearby," he said in a panic. "We can't let any more of these things out." I then began pushing him towards the door. "Then go," I yelled. "Do what you have to do." Alistair began to sprint blindly towards the door. I heard a rumble like an earthquake, then beyond the threshold, I saw hordes of demons rushing towards the doorway. As they came within feet of the door, Alistair put his left arm out over the threshold, took the knife, and brutally slashed his arms open. The blood began to drip and pool instantly around the threshold. I heard screaming from beyond, from the demons of hell. Then Alistair was blown back, as if hit by an invisible car, and went sprawling. The metal door slammed closed. Then the entire hallway began to shimmer and wink out of existence. I couldn't believe my eyes. Soon, we were back in the original room, just the shaman and me and an unconscious Alistair. I pulled my phone out and called for help. The military sent a Lifestar helicopter to land to take Alistair to a nearby hospital for stitches and a medical review of his other injuries. I helped untie the shaman, found some clothes to dress him, and let him outside. "So, do you think it's over?" I asked him. The shaman then looked at me, his eyes still brimming with hatred and disgust, and said, "As long as there's still people like you in the world, it will never be fucking over."